Welcome to the Cap Space Wins Cups podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Cap Space Wins Cups podcast, episode 89 on the Area 51 Sports Network. I am your host, Hassan Ahmed. I am joined alongside, as per usual, my twin brother, Asan Ace Ahmed. How's it going, buddy?
Good, man. How you doing?
And, of course, by Hussein, who's the Moose Ahmed. Who's, how's it going, dude?
What's up, boys?
No Andy again this week. Ace, again, I don't know how many times I got to tell you this. When I ask you how you're doing, you're not supposed to ask me how I'm doing because I'm still going through the intro. Just stay good and move on.
Okay. What's that have to do with Andy?
Okay. I just, it's a triggering point for me, all right?
Andy's still in Mexico with Amon.
Or something like that. Before we get started for this week's episode, we'd like to thank the title sponsor, No Name Hockey. No Name Hockey provides high-quality hockey sticks without breaking the bank. No more paying $300 plus for a twig. Try out No Name Hockey, offering high-end hockey sticks for the no-names out there and the players currently making a name. Use code AREA51 for $10 off one item. And if every, for every item you buy, you get another 10 bucks off. So two items get you $20, three gets you $30, and so on and so forth. Which, again, Hussein, is not doubling the discount. Am I correct?
Ace had me muted. I didn't want to talk into the muted mic. That is correct. You're stacking. You can stack the discount.
It's a stackable discount. It doesn't double. Thank you. All right, guys. Yeah, it's been. How you guys doing? We're recording on a Friday this week. It's Ace's baby's birthday tomorrow, so we will not be able to record on our usual Saturday time slot.
You almost made it out.
I was having a sip of my coffee.
I just wanted to say that was like very captivizing, you know, like
captivizing.
You drove
captivating, buddy.
Yeah, I'm just gonna leave. Oh wait, you almost made the entire intro without asking Ace. Oh, I sound quiet in my own ears.
Well, the mic's in a new spot. I can definitely hear myself in my own ears. No issues.
How would that change?
I don't know what it is, but I can really hear myself today. I always gotta check because one time you did mute me. I just want to say
I turned the gain down. That's why you sound better.
Thank you. I like it. All right, guys. Yeah, you guys doing good?
Yeah, we're doing good. Yeah. I'm doing good.
Now you're not asking him how is he doing.
Now you can just told me not to do. You can do your little banter bit now, buddy.
Banter. No, man. I'm good. Just watching the Canucks. Enjoying my life. Yeah, not much.
All right, right on. All right, no worries. Let's just get into this stuff, guys. Been kind of
I didn't really want to like waste too much time.
Been kind of a hectic week for the Canucks.
Less
than a week. What do you guys want to talk about first? Do you guys want to talk about what actually happened in the preseason game, or should we talk about like everything else?
Let's talk about what happened on the ice first. I feel like if we get it's gonna get too off the rails. If we start with
the Canucks blow with a 2-goal lead to Seattle Kraken. I'm gonna call this preseason game one. None of that split squad garbage. This was a pretty heavy NHL team for Vancouver. You obviously had JT Miller in the lineup. The only real guys of consequence missing were like Myers, Podkolzin, and Horvat. You had a lot of other regulars in. Kuzmenko stole the show with 3 points, 2 goals, and an assist. Power play looked really well, really good. But yeah, I don't really want to get too much into that. I just want to know what you guys thought. Who were you guys, biggest risers in that game?
Well, I mean, you already mentioned the first one off the bat, Andrei Kuzmenko. Obviously, that's going to go around the horn. For me, I was just happy to watch a game where Elias Pettersson looked like Elias Pettersson. Deke Pete was in full effect there. He welcomed Shane Wright to the NHL in the third period, I want to say, and he just played terrific. Those are my risers, really. Miller was kind of whatever. I thought Quinn Hughes had his moments, obviously, on the first goal. There's obviously the whole notion that he looked like a point guard going around on Twitter, and I have to say I agree. That was just a terrific play. I think the experiment with him on the right side maybe didn't go the greatest, but I had fun watching him and OEL on the same pair. In terms of stuff I didn't like, I mean, I'm pretty sure you two are both going to get your thoughts in on this, but Danny DeKeyser and Tucker Poolman, file it under things I never want to see again.
I'm with you. I think the first two periods are pretty great. I think Patterson was looking active. Kuzmenko obviously was great. I don't really think Danny DeKeyser is going to be making this team. I don't want to get too worked up on a guy on a PTO playing a preseason game who's probably not going to be a regular anyways. So not going to get too worked up about that, about him looking slow. He's had major back injuries. There's a reason this guy's on a PTO. As far as Poolman goes, I'm going to be... call me concerned if this guy is supposed to be an everyday player. Hey, so I don't know if you want to get in on this.
I've been very disappointed in Tucker Poolman's preseason. In terms of guys that I thought... look, guys, this is a positive show now, all right? This is a positive show. We started the good stuff, okay? It's like who said I was happy with Kuzmenko. I really like Kyle Burrow's game as well. I think he showed himself well as well. I think he's climbing the depth chart a bit. I've been impressed with Rathbone. I think he's going to be played a lot, and he's getting more opportunity. He's going to get more opportunity this preseason to show what he's made of. So I'm happy to see that. Excuse me. Other things that I liked about the game, the power play looks crisp. I think with the Besser injury, which we'll discuss a bit later. I think Kuzmenko slid in nicely on the front of the in the net front there, which I think. Andy's not here, but he's popping off of Chaisson in the group chat, and a lot of people saying that, you know, he's so good in that front presence and stuff like that, but I guess it shows that, you know, hey, maybe putting a more high-skilled player in front of the net can, he can maybe bang in some pucks that are four feet away from the net and make some nice passes from below the goal line, and obviously he has way more of a dynamic element to his game than Chaisson ever did. As far as, like, things that I didn't like, yeah, Hussein, I agree with you. Poolman DeKeyser, they just don't. DeKeyser looks like he cannot move at an NHL level.
Tucker Poolman looks like he belongs in the AHL.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but Poolman has just been terrible, terrible. I don't know how you can expect this guy to be playing top 6 minutes, which is weird since he's on a pair with Quinn Hughes at practice yesterday. Yeah. I was not a fan of Poolman. DeKeyser is really the movement, I think, is an issue. And if you're going to make a blue line with a guy like Luke Shen on it, and who's not the most fleet of foot guy. And then OEL, I know he's had solid, he's solid, but he's had his moments where he looks like he's a little bit of lumbering as well. So you're going to have half your skaters on your blue line be, you know, bad skaters or below average NHL or like lumbering around is not really going to work in the modern NHL, especially with the way the Canucks are currently constructed.
Especially if you're asking one of those bad skaters to play on a pair with Quinn Hughes. I mean, like, we saw Luke Shen's probably a better skater than Tucker Poolman. I'm not really sure.
I would disagree with that. Poolman's not a better skater than
Shen. Hung around the NHL for longer, so I feel like you'd be more comfortable to put him on the first pair. I feel like...
I'm just going to... The Canucks' real issue is that they have no top four, really.
Yeah.
You know Quinn Hughes and Oliver Ekman-Larsson are going to be, you know, your number one and two defensemen. Whether or not they play together is a matter of...
time.
Opinion or how you want to set up your lineup, but they're going to be 1-2 in ice time. For all his faults, Tyler Myers is clearly the third best defenseman on this team. We're listening to IMAC on the radio with Halford and Bruff the other day. It's not perfect that Tyler Myers is your third. What do you want me to do?
Nothing. Keep going.
Like, you can't talk to me while I'm talking.
I'm not talking to you.
You're trying to tell me to write something down.
I'm not trying to write something down. Just making sure you watch the clock there.
I have it on in front of me for a reason.
Okay. Carry on.
God. Tyler Myers is going to be this team's third highest minute defenseman. That's obviously not perfect, but it is what it is at this point. Like, they have no one internally who's going to be better than him. Like, the only guy would be Rathbone, but Rathbone is a long way away from showing me that he's going to be a 20-minute a night defenseman. I don't know if you guys agree with that. So the real issue comes down to who are you going to play in that top four? We all kind of just said we didn't like Poolman's game, so I don't think it's going to be Poolman. Dermott is injured. He probably seems like one of the options, but
Dermott injury is derailing your season, then you've got bigger problems.
And Luke Shen, people have talked great about this guy for all of last year, but you know it's pretty clear he's not an everyday top four guy at this option. So what are the options here?
Well, I think
it is. He's right. It is between Dermott and Poolman. It's pretty much a two way bat.
It was a training camp battle. I mean, by all accounts,
I think the only reason Tucker Poolman's sticking around longer here The only reason Tucker Pullman's sticking around longer here and is still in this conversation to play in the Canucks top four is strictly based on the fact that he's right-handed. And, you know, maybe they just don't want to throw OEL or this is...
What are you doing? I'm just meeting our quota of sound effects.
Oh, before we started the show today, Hassan said we have a very nice-looking soundboard. And our good
his
friend...
skin's covered. How many sound effects do you have, Ace?
Our producer, Asan's not good at math, so this is going to take him a while.
20 sound effects on this thing. And you people listen to the show. We barely ever use any sound effects.
We use two. The intro and the outro.
We use two of the intro and the outro. So I've now made a quota that Ace has to play at least one sound effect every 10 minutes. So that was 10 minutes on the dot, and I just played a random one. So
get ready for weird
sound effects. Get ready for weird sound effects at times that make no sense. But we were going to use the soundboard. All right, we didn't set it up for no reason.
Anyway,
carry on.
I believe the only reason this is still a discussion.
You're saying we didn't set up for no reason.
Hey,
like,
I
didn't do 100% of the work.
I helped.
They don't. Okay, I'm gonna let's get back to the defense.
Okay, yeah,
here.
Sorry.
The only reason Tucker Pullman is still
so the reason I got upset at you is because I thought you were telling me to write down the timestamp for what we were just about to talk about, and I was like, I haven't even finished my thought. How do you know we should cut this audio? You're so stupid.
Oh man,
keep going. Who's it?
I feel like people.
We're going to inside baseball here. Let's keep going.
Is this fun for people to listen to?
Probably not.
Anyway. I'm going to really say it before anyone cuts me off now. The only reason Pullman's still in the discussion is because he's right-handed. And we all know NHL coaches' fear of making left-handed people play the right side. We talked about it. And you know what?
I'm going to cut you off, but not because of something about the podcast.
No,
because
fine,
you're going to have somebody play that offside anyways.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's
you have too many right-handed defensemen anyways.
That's
wow.
You have too many. Yeah.
not too many good ones, let me tell you.
Wait, so... Travis Dermott's actually...
left-handed?
But he plays...
That one never sounds good to me.
Yeah, you gotta fix that.
He's actually left-handed, but he plays... But he's comfortable playing the right side.
Yes.
See, I don't understand...
Okay, that one sounds better. Yeah.
I don't understand how a guy like Travis Dermott in the first place... Like, where's like the quota for like who's allowed to be a both-side defenseman? You know, like, God forbid Quinn Hughes plays the right
side.
Well,
Dermott pretty much never played the right side since he came to Vancouver.
Yeah,
that's
fact. But yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, like,
even
why...
Even though he was kind of touted as a guy who could play?
Play, that's what I'm saying. So, like, obviously, if he's going to play in the top four this year, he's playing the right side, right? Or... Are you saying he goes to the left side?
I don't. Okay, well, first of all, Quinn Hughes did not look that good on the left side, on the right side.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, I mean, I think it's time. Like, I mean, I know it was one preseason game against an AHL team.
No, that's
but that should
that's
be enough.
That's enough
for me to
yeah.
like. Let's end this experiment. I don't know if it's enough for me to end this experiment, but I definitely don't think that it's enough for me. The Canucks need to get off to a good start. The Canucks need to get off to a good start. No, agree or disagree. The Canucks need to get off to a good start this season.
No,
yeah, agree.
Like,
yes, they do. And if you're going to make, are we really going to play games with our best player, like, in the first 5-10 years of the season? The Canucks need to have a freaking hot start to the season if they want to make the playoffs. You saw what it is like to be behind the eight ball. We're going to really run this experiment in the regular season. Quinn Hughes looks much more dynamic on the left side, on his strong side. Leave him there. I think the Canucks can make a waiver claim or two to, you know, help shore up some help on the right side of the defense or just the defense in general. But we know Quinn Hughes and Luke Shen played reasonably well together. I do not think Luke Shen can survive 82 games a year next to Quinn Hughes.
Yes.
Can he survive the first 10 games of the season?
Probably.
I think yes.
Yeah.
So let's put him on there. Let's go to the partner he's comfortable with. Let him do their thing. And then let's figure it out. I'm sorry.
Travis Dermott getting hurt.
And then that leaves you OEL and Myers, your second pair.
Which
they performed
solid
well.
Enough.
That was solid.
Yeah.
And then I think a guy like Kyle Burrows has shown himself well to maybe start on the bottom pair with a guy like Jack Rathbone.
Okay, see, this is where the real problem comes in because Jack Rathbone's like the other guy on the third pair.
Obviously,
and now,
this is kind of a Dermott injury.
No, I know. And then if you're a coach, it's just like, oh, like Luke Shen's the perfect guy to play there. So I can kind of understand.
Well, Kyle Burrows is like a worse version of Luke Shen, and Jack Rathbone's like a worse version of Quinn Hughes.
Yeah,
so
put them all together.
The match made it happen.
Put them all together. I mean, yeah, Travis Dermott getting hurt, you kind of just touched on it. I think the real problem with him getting hurt also is I'm a big advocate for, you know, he apparently can play both sides. I'm a big advocate for putting him on a pair with Quinn Hughes.
Can Dermott?
Yeah.
Do you think Dermott is so much more better equipped to handle like playing top pair minutes for games a year than Luke Shen?
Yeah, probably. He played top 4 minutes in his entire career there.
So
in
your solution, you want Dermott on the right side in this situation?
Yeah,
or Hughes on
yeah
right
Dermott
side?
On the right side for the preseason. Because he already played the right side in Toronto. I wouldn't mind seeing him do it with Quinn Hughes. He played a lot with Morgan Riley and Jake Muzzin in their top four. And, you know, what you could argue during that time was a harder division. Regardless, he played top 4 minutes on his right side before for, you know, a Stanley Cup contender. You know, there's obviously the Leafs jokes that they don't get out of the first round, but every single season that they had him there, they were a contender. They were a surefire playoff team. I don't mind trying him out there on a pair with Quinn Hughes and then let OEL and Tyler Myers, like Sandra said there, Obviously, they had great results. Just let him play together as your second pair.
Hussein, what do you think, in a single season, what do you think Travis Dermott's highest average time on ice was?
Like 18 minutes a night.
17, 19? You want to know what year he did that in? 2019, 2020. 2018, 2019, he was 17, 18. 2017, 18, he was 16 minutes. Then 2021, 2022, he was 15, 20. 2021,
yeah, the end. That's why he was 13. In the first place.
13. 13 minutes a night, he's bought a pair of D-men.
Yeah, that's because they got Brody and they made different moves to change out their top four. That's
okay, but the guy has not played those kind of 18 minutes a night for two seasons now.
Sure, and you just told me
the Leafs are deeper on the black end than the Canucks are, for sure.
Yeah, clearly. Very clearly. And they're a surefire playoff team every year that he was there. And all I'm saying is you and all three of us just agreed that Luke Shen cannot handle 82 games at all.
What do you think his average ice time was in Vancouver last season?
Travis Dermott's probably something around the same.
15 minutes, maybe 15 minutes a night.
Like, I'll say 17.
Yeah, 16:54.
I'm just saying, if you think Luke Shen can't handle 82 games, I would say, sure, it was 2 years ago, but that's probably better.
This gets back to the crux of the issue, the Canucks really don't have a long-term
program. Yeah, they were arguing about who should play with Quinn Hughes, Luke Shen, or Travis Dermott.
Like, really, neither of these are good options.
I'm just saying, stylistically.
In the short term, I'd rather have Luke Shen. Sure. You know what you have in that, at least if you're looking in the short term. But that is pretty much proven that you're not going to be able to ride that for 82 games.
I'm not saying that.
So
I didn't say that. Like, the Canucks are always. So you think you're going to pick up a guy off waivers who's going to be able to play top 4 minutes for you?
Even if he can play on the left side, it'll still give you some flexibility somewhat to figure out what you can do with these
so
other guys.
So you want rotating cast partners for whoever can survive 10 games?
Okay, I got a question for you guys. Why? And I don't really know why it hasn't been tried. Quinn Hughes and Tyler Myers together. Myers is going to be in a top 4 role anyways. He's played the big minutes in his career before. Technically, playing with Quinn Hughes should lighten the defensive load on him because you're going to think that being out there with Hughes is
That pair is too defensively deficient. When the Canucks are trailing, they often put those two together, and it does work, but I don't think you can play
So if you go to that and then play maybe OEL. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to come to Quinn Hughes' defense for that comment. Rookie season, I can kind of get it. Tyler Myers is not the kind of guy you want to bring up a defenseman in the NHL, and obviously during that time they had Chris Tanev, like the better version of Luke Shen. You know, everyone's a version of Luke Shen. The middle season there in the COVID year, the shit was just in the fan for the Canucks no matter what was happening. Quinn Hughes played his worst season in the NHL. Of course, him playing with Tyler Myers didn't work. But you saw what after that season, he said that his priority in the offseason was to improve his game in his own zone. And at the end of pretty much entirely last year, you could argue Quinn Hughes was the team's best player, and he took significant steps in being much better in his own end. I'm with Ace. I don't see why not just try Tyler Myers back there. He's a good skater. That's the biggest thing you need on a guy who's going to play on a pair with Quinn Hughes.
I get what they're trying to do by trying to make a pair out of the Gathorn any sort of situation, and obviously a Quinn Hughes-Tyler Myers pair isn't really like a shutdown pair, but I mean, look, to be honest with you, I don't think this club is going to have any trouble finding situations to play Quinn Hughes in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if at 5-on-5 you want to keep them together, and you know the game situation dictates that, you know what, we got to put Shen on that pair or Dermott or OEL or whatever. I think there's lots of flexibility, and I think the coaching staff is going to be a willingness to let their best defenseman get out there more often.
I think it's not working also easier to find.
So I just think that generally at 5-on-5 they're an offensive pair. They're going to spend most of their time in the offensive zone pushing the puck up, right? If you kind of manage their deployment so they're out there with some of the top two or three lines, the Canucks are pretty deep up front. You should have some guys who can keep the puck down there and not get, you know, just avoid getting pinned in your own zone. And just, I think over the course of 82 games, I have more confidence that pair is going to hold up to their level of play over a pair like Hughes and Shen or Hughes and Pullman or something like that.
Yeah, I was also going to say, I think it's easier to find a person off waivers to fill the role of, hey, I need you to come in here and play on a pair with, you know, Ekman Larson or Luke Shen, and you just need to be able to go out and play 5-on-5, you know, maybe eat some tough minutes. I think that's easier to find on waivers than it is. It's like, hey, I need you to come here, play on a pair with our best defenseman, and you're also going to have to play like 25 minutes a night.
And be good
in your own end. You're never going to find that on waivers. I feel like it's easier to find a guy who could play, you know, that's 16-17-minute range.
I think we need to, I was going to say you guys, but I think the general you, Canucks fans, we got to understand, like, there is no perfect partner for Quinn Hughes in the Canucks right now. And if he is...
Yeah, he left a couple years ago.
I mean, yeah. And the Canucks obviously don't have any prospects in the system right now to replace that guy.
Jet Wu.
This is why we want to trade JT Miller.
Jonathan Myrenberg.
All that stuff is, you know, all those reasons. So you got to make do with what you have. And This is a critical season for the Canucks, and they want to play well. And if playing well means that you got to give Quinn Hughes a different partner every 10 or 15 games for a guy who can eat some minutes, if it's a Luke Shen, if it's Myers, if it's Ekman Larson, whoever it is who can handle playing with Quinn Hughes for maybe 10 to 20 games at a time, just do it. Quinn Hughes is dynamic enough in his own position to make that work. And if that's getting results on the ice at the end of the day, yes, it's not a long-term solution. I'm not... This is not... Oh, the problem solved. But that is a long-term issue. And spoiler alert, you're not going to fix it in season, and you're probably not going to fix it in the trade deadline or on waivers. You need to draft this guy, or you need to make a big trade, which, you know, seems like probably not the route at this minute.
Okay. I mean, unless the Canucks show willingness to part with a major asset, like a first-round pick or a top-end prospect.
Or Bo Horvat. One of those middle six wingers that they have, like...
Okay, you see, how often are middle six wingers getting traded for top four defensemen?
This is
all
the kind
of your stress has gone given away for free to
this
Seattle.
This is the kind of situation where the Taylor Hall for Adam Larson-esque trade would kind of make sense. Because if you could get a prime Adam Larson into this team right now to play with Quinn Hughes, that would be the perfect guy to pair with.
And would you create a guy like Brock Besser for that?
Probably. I was thinking a guy like Connor Garland, but that's like general principle. I'm
not saying that that happens very often.
I don't
want to
get too down this hypothetical, but I wouldn't really trade Brock Besser because he's probably the best winger on the team.
I guess, but he's making a big ticket nowadays as well. You need to
let's be real. Like, obviously, the easiest way to have done that was just to trade JT Miller, which obviously didn't happen. I'm just saying, I'm not saying like by any means.
Okay, but I mean, realistically, if you had done that, how many team people would be happy with that move? If you had received an Adam Larson type player, like, let's just.
Oh, for
David JT
Miller.
Seaverson?
Okay,
for JT
yeah,
Miller,
yeah,
for
sure.
JT Seaverson, one for
no,
one?
No, that's why. That's why I'm saying you're.
Okay, no. Like, imagine if the Canucks go back to last year's trade deadline.
Sure.
Last year's trade deadline. Yeah, last year's trade deadline. Seaverson had 1 year left on his contract as well, same as Miller. They were the exact same situation. And they pretty much had the exact same salary this season as well. If last year the Canucks said, all right, we're trading JT Miller for David Seaverson, one for one, no draft picks, nothing, how many of us would have been happy with that trade?
No, that's why I was just suggesting a guy like Connor Garland. I'm saying if you want that long...
But that's just
is
echoes
David
the
Seaverson,
point. Right-handed defensemen are so valuable. Do you think you could get... Seaverson out of New Jersey for Garland one-for-one?
Yes.
Well, probably... Okay, contractual situation in that situation
no, but that's
probably
why, that's,
makes
that's,
it
that's
so...
They should have been kicking...
You have... Well, Seaverson's a pending UFA now, and Garland's still...
Well, that's why
left.
They should have been kicking tires on a guy like John Marino or Marcus Pedersen or fucking Ty Smith. Like... The list goes on if people got moved this offseason for not that high
okay,
of a price.
Okay, but like, John Marino maybe, but Ty Smith is not a proven top four NHL defenseman.
Sure,
yeah,
that's true.
He's got a good underlying profile, but like, he's not a guy you're like, oh yeah, like, let's airdrop
And John Marino has some serious question marks about him as a top four guy. There's no reason Pittsburgh traded him.
Sure, he's got some question marks. But would you agree if we airdrop John Marino? I know this is a bad habit. I'm not we. If the Canucks airdrop John Marino onto their blue line right now, is he easily in the top four?
Well, yes.
Head and shoulders above whoever.
Okay, well, this is
well,
the
we
problem.
Just outlined,
the
we,
who
just
say out, this...
we just outlined how shit the top four is. Because
okay,
there's
the options were John Marino, Travis Dermott, and Kyle Burrows. Obviously,
yeah,
okay, John
that's
Marino.
What I'm saying, though.
Yeah, but he's not exactly beating. He's not actually going up against Bobby Orr here.
Sure, and Connor Garland's not Bobby Orr by any means either on forward. Like,
okay, I just want to say, this is the kind of prime example of people looking at analytic Jay Fresh player card on John Marino and talk about how amazing he is and never have watched like two games a year of watching.
I'm not saying he's amazing, though. You're getting me wrong. I'm not saying he's amazing. I'm just saying Connor Garland's not like this proven 60, 70 point winger that, like, God forbid you trade. He didn't even score 20 goals
okay,
last year.
Hussein, if the Canucks could trade Connor Garland right now for a John Marino type of player, that trade would have been done yesterday.
Well, I don't know.
Yes, it would have. That trade would have happened in the offseason. If the Canucks could have gotten Garland off their books, the guy that this management group didn't bring in, has a lot of term left on his contract, underperformed last season, isn't a super stylistic fit with the team. If he could get traded for a right-shot defenseman with a good underlying profile, who's around the same age, in a similar contract situation, there's no way that trade wasn't done. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're right, because then no one's going to trade a right shot defense. I feel like that's a good place to leave this conversation.
Yeah, this wasn't even on the agenda. Okay, I'm just going to run through the injury report here on the Canucks real quick. Obviously, we talked, kind of mentioned it. Brock Besser underwent a successful hand surgery. He'll be out for 3 to 4 weeks. Excuse me. Here we go. Besser, but he'll skate with the group within a couple of days. Mikheyev has a lower body injury, is considered week to week. There was some fear that he was torn ACL Then someone said he's going to skate tomorrow. Then someone said that he's week to week. So that's what we settled on.
Frank Saravalli, man.
Frank Saravalli, yeah. He's just coming on half of
it.
Bro,
don't say anything too bad about him. You never know if he wants to come on our pod. Yes.
I DM'd him one time. He never answered.
Oh, Frank.
Travis Dero is feeling a little woozy. Boudreaux says he was told
okay,
to the big
mean?
Head.
What does that mean?
Concussion?
I'm so
or does
mad.
He feel sick?
Tyler Myers is just sick, not COVID, just sick.
He was also practicing.
Yeah, Dermot felt woozy before leaving practice after taking a hit. And then he left the practice ice. So Canucks obviously aren't after an ideal start here. This is, could be a tough go. But obviously the Canucks, like we mentioned, Canucks can't afford to come off to a cannot afford to have a bad start to the season. They have all this newfound depth apparently up front. It's time for it to put to the test. It's gonna go early. Hoglander, thank God for if you're a Canucks fan, that Hoglander coming into camp and looked like an NHLer. Because I think that'll mitigate the loss of Besser. You know, and hopefully Besser only misses, you know, 4 or 5 games and he should be back and could hopefully still have a great year. No?
Wait, sorry. I don't know. I was reading something.
No, I mean, I just think that...
Yeah, no,
big opportunity for Hoglander, obviously, is all I was saying.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I was going to say it's also fair to note that, you know, at the time of recording this video, the Tyler Myers isn't really
video.
On the injury... He's not... What?
Video? It's a podcast?
Oh,
recording
God, yeah,
never podcast.
Mind. Anyway... He's not really on the injury report anymore because he practiced like this morning and the day. Yeah, he's already practiced on the day of recording this podcast, so it seems like he's okay now. Yeah, I mean, the opportunity for Hoglander is going to be a tall test. I think he's going to... There's a chance he could be gifted a top 6 spot again.
I feel like this coach...
He was skating on a line with Pod Colton and Horvat, by the way.
This coach is kind of shown a reluctance to kind of gift Hoglander or anything, I feel, because last night the Canucks played a preseason game against the Seattle Kraken. We mentioned it off the top. Hoglander was not playing with Pettersson or Miller in that game, even though they were.
Linus
kind
Carlson
of,
was actually getting along with Pettersson.
Linus Carlson was actually on that line. I don't know if we should read anything into that in terms of other than Linus Carlson. They're just getting a better look at Linus Carlson before they send it to Abbotsford, because I don't really think Linus Carlson has a chance of making this team. Hoglander, on the other hand, there's a real chance that he would have to start on your fourth line this year. So they're maybe putting him in a more checking role to see how he responds.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's looked good and he seems like he's been up to the task no matter where he's been put. So I like his energy and I think Hoglander can be a very good fourth liner for the team. Like, can actually create some mismatches for teams. I know a lot of people are like, oh, if Hoglander's on your fourth line, you should just better off sending Abbotsford. I don't really prescribe to that theory personally.
Yeah, I agree. I completely disagree with that as well. I mean, like, having a scoring, you know, bottom six, obviously this year it's not really a bottom six, top six. It's more of the top nine, fourth line. But even then, the Canucks have rarely got any kind of scoring or finishing from their fourth line. I mean, like, honestly, in recent memory, their best one was probably, what, Tyler Mott, maybe? Like, maybe Matt Highmore, if you want. Like, I think Hoglander can finally bring something that this team has needed for, you know, a long time here. Just a line that can actually start bearing something. I mean, Dakota Joshua, I'm not sure if he's going to bring finish, but he looks like, from what I saw in that preseason game, I definitely don't mind what I saw. He moves.
Are you saying the Canucks have an abundance of fourth liners?
Well, I know there's the huge argument, not argument, but when Andy, you know, still used to record with us when we were making our preseason, you know, predictions for the lines of what opening night will look like. And, you know, not a single person on our podcast had all of Lazar, Dickinson, Joshua, and Hoglander. And obviously, to start the year now, it looks like the Canucks are kind of, you know, their hands being forced. They're going to have to play all four of those plus one more, if I'm not mistaken, right? If Mikheyev is also hurt, they're going to have to play one more guy on top of that. So now you're asking, like, who's the next guy coming off the fourth line that you're asking to, you know, you have to play in the top nine?
Yeah.
In your guys' opinion, who would that be?
Lazar?
Like, I'm thinking maybe Jason Dickinson. On the
yeah,
like throw him on
yeah,
the wing.
Yeah,
maybe.
You're right. Instead, he could probably be in a third line checking role.
Is it Dakota Joshua?
I don't think so.
Like, no.
I don't think so.
And then follow up, who's the guy who's replacing that? You know, like who's gonna play on the fourth line? Who's
DJ Sepp
for
he's
sure?
He's had a strong camp
yeah.
and
that's what I was
if
saying.
He doesn't make the team
Sheldon
out of camp,
Rise,
sounds like he'd be,
that's
he'd,
what
be
I'm
up,
saying.
He'd be up near the top of the call up list.
Yeah, Sheldon Rise maybe he's on the other one, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know. Hoglander, I would bet he starts, honestly. As much as you said there's a reluctance, I would bet he starts.
No,
in the top
I think he's starting. I think he's going to start in NHL, and I think...
I think it might be a top
nine role. I think he'll be in a top nine role. I think he'll play with one of Pettersson, Horvat, or Besser.
I think especially with both Mikheyev and Besser are out to start the year.
I think if they're both
Mikheyev obviously has a possibility that he'll be back before the season starts, and Besser obviously as well. They said 3 to 4 weeks for that injury. Yeah, so obviously, if he feels quickly, there's a chance he'll be back before then.
I think the real telling thing for Besser would be the Canucks obviously start their season on a 5-game or 6-game road trip.
If he flies,
there's a chance he's going to come back early. If not, he's not.
On this Besser injury, quickly, just in terms of the cap ramifications, because I wanted to get a salary cap guy on here to talk about this, but I've done my own digging on this in case. Because of the training complexity of training camp injuries, I don't think. Well, this is speculation on my part, but Grant seems to agree that Besser won't be placed on LTIR because LTIR you have to be miss a minimum of 10 games. So unless you're 100% sure that kid's helpful when you're looking up there, you're all right, buddy. Like you're going through a tough time. What's going on?
You know, you're gonna sound like a real dickhead when we get to the part of this. When we get to this part of the podcast, but carry on.
Okay. I'm gonna keep talking about Brock Besser then. So unless you're absolutely certain that he's gonna miss 10 games, you're probably not gonna place him on LTIR because he's such a quality player. If there's a chance he returns early, you're gonna not want to put him on LTIR. So you're gonna have to put him on injured reserve, which means you're not gonna be able to replace him cap wise. So that's just something to consider because if.
So it's going to be AHL replacement is what you're saying on the fourth line?
It's going to be a cheaper replacement, which I'm saying is going to open up a spot for Hoglander because you're probably not going to be adding anybody off waivers who's making more than the league minimum or below the 1.125 cap hit to make the team. So unless, of course, Besser has a setback where they're absolutely certain that he's going to miss more than 11 games.
Yep. Fair enough. Thanks for that, Ace. We got to get into this, obviously. Last week, Ace, you came on this show and defended the owner pretty vehemently. And since then, it's come out that he stopped making child support payments to his ex-wife, Talia Aquilini. There's been some signed affidavits by his children.
I don't think he stopped making the payments.
There's an issue in family court about the child support payments. He wants to know where the money's going because he has no details about the kids, his children's university they're going to. The children have all had signed affidavits saying that they do not want their father to be contacted about this or have any way of contacting them because of psychological and physical abuse that they suffer from their children.
These are not kids.
They're adults now. They're all in their 20s. The abuse occurred when they were children. Some of the allegations are pretty disturbing. Throwing a child across the room, punching a 5-year-old in their sleep. Pretty serious stuff. These are sworn signed affidavits that have been delivered to Aquilini, apparently, since last year. They were also presented in court, so this is evidence here that's been in the case. He's not on trial for the child abuse. We should make that clear. It's not a criminal case. It's a civil case regarding the payments of child support. So please keep that in mind. We don't really have any more information than that to go off of right now. Obviously, these are pretty serious and disturbing allegations, if they are true. But obviously, you know, there's a legal process to be played out here. But it's just obviously not a good look for the Canucks and for Aquilini. Obviously, with the whole Brooke Ellis and the burner Twitter account and whatever the situation was there, just not a good look for the organization. The reason I have Kids Help Phone up here is if you are struggling with a tough time and you need help, obviously call Kids Help Phone 1-800-668-6868. It's free to use for children up to the age of 19. So if you're having any sort of problems at home, is completely anonymous. Please reach out. You're not alone. Get help. We just wanted to put that resource out there, obviously. So, yeah. Ace, do you feel like a dickhead now?
I feel like a dickhead.
Thank you.
Now or twice.
And you're a dad as well.
Because I was vehemently defending Aquilini on here. Yes. Obviously, that episode came out before the allegations were made. And obviously, my commentary was more about him as an owner and about how he's spending his money.
And we also said not to talk about him anymore on this podcast.
But we did say if there was relevant news, we would talk about it, and we are talking about it.
Yeah.
And that is relevant news. And it's pretty serious, obviously. So I don't want to make light of it. I know we joke around here, but we're not going to make light of this. It's pretty serious stuff. So yeah. Just again, to clarify, he's not facing any kind of criminal charges for. Sorry, you want to go?
Yeah, I just didn't want to mention that the NHL made a statement as well.
I was going to get to that. Yeah.
Aquilini made a statement saying that these claims are untrue and his camp is outraged, quote unquote, by them. The NHL has reached out and said that they have been in contact with Mr. Aquilini and his lawyers, but since it's a legal proceeding, they're not doing anything to intervene at this time. I know a lot of people have been saying that kind of stuff. I kind of feel gutless kind of examining this from a hockey perspective, and people kind of like sell the team, get rid of the owner. Yeah, maybe you're not a fan of Aquilini. This is not the time for me to kind of, you know, boast this up because it's bad for my hockey team. You know, I hope his children are okay. I hope
they're false, honestly.
I don't know what to do. I mean, I don't know. I hope that his children are all right. And, you know, anyone who's suffering from abuse, you know, get the help that they need.
Obviously, they're pretty disturbing to read. I don't really... Again, we have no more information than that. I'm not really going to sit here and comment about it. I don't have...
Family court is always...
Family court is obviously always messy. And so there's, you know, there's going to be due process here. And, you know, hopefully in time...
Just the bottom line is not a criminal case. It's about child support, like you mentioned. So, just to speak about the NHL, I mean, I'm honestly would be very surprised if there's any kind of suspension or, you know, forcing that team NHL to step in
or any punitive punishment or anything like that.
Like at this point, I think it seems too early at this point for anything like that, and I don't think we're gonna speculate about that right now, are we?
Yeah, don't be that guy to speculate on it either. Just wait.
Yeah. Again, end of the day, these are still just allegations. We don't really know anything else about the situation at this point. Whatever I've just said on here is obviously all out
there.
That's
the news we have up to this point.
So, yeah. I think I'll leave that there. Rachel Dory? Should we talk about Rachel Dory?
Yeah, sure. Let's get on that.
Did anything else you want to talk about before?
No, I think we're good with that.
No, let's do it.
So this was grabbed on Donnie and Dolly. Don Taylor casually mentioning on his show that Rachel Dory has apparently been let go by the Vancouver Canucks. He wasn't sure if it was a rumor. Since that happened, it is confirmed. Yes, Rachel Dory has left the Vancouver Canucks. I don't know if she was fired, if she was let go, or if she left on her own accord. Rick Dollywall, apparently one of Scary Spice today, said that he heard about this rumor. It's confirmed. He just didn't report it. Apparently, nothing to do with the owner, nothing to do with her Twitter likes or social media.
That's Sat reporting that, by the way.
Sat reported that. Rick Dollywall also reported that. Nothing to do with any of that, apparently, he said. He said that it's a personal issue and that she's 25 years old and he doesn't want to, you know, put her story out there or anything like that. I'm sure we'll get some more details about it in the meantime, but it is a weird situation that Rachel Dory kind of up and left the Vancouver Canucks. No press release from the team at this point. A spokesperson has confirmed it that to the Canucks that, yes, it's true that she is no longer with the organization. Obviously she was just hired in January and now it's September, so you know, just around for eight, nine months and she's gone. People have a lot of thoughts about this. What do you guys think?
Do you want me to go first? I mean, it's just a really weird and like bizarre situation almost. Just like I think that'd be the word I would use to describe it. Like, training camp comes around, you know, obviously when they made these hires, you know, the Canucks were organization and front office, you know, was pretty, not boastful, but, you know, I'd say boastful, actually, about these hirings. You know, training camp rolls around, you know, Bruce Boudreau talks to the media for first time in a while and, you know, he lets him know that, you know, Rachel Dory might have a spot on, like, their coaching staff and, you know, she's going to be helping them out with film and stuff like that. And then, you know, they play one preseason game and then all of a sudden she just nodded the next practice. It's really weird. Obviously, we're not insiders. You know, we don't have scoops or stuff like that. You know, we're making our own judgments and stuff based on, you know, most of the people listening to the show have access to them as well. So it's really hard to tell what happened. At the end of the day, I know there's like a lot of stuff going out there that, you know, it's because she disagreed about keeping JT Miller and, you know, signing Ilya Mikheyev and stuff. I'm not really an entire believer about that stuff. I'm not really sure how much input, you know, she would have had being just a member of the analytics department. I don't really feel like she was part of those
high-level
meetings to re-sign, you know, JT Miller or, you know, trade him. So I think for me, it's more so let's just see what comes out.
Okay, this is purely speculative on Hussein's part, by the way, just so everyone's clear. Yeah. We don't know anything about this.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to comment about, like, why I think she left, but I do really think the whole situation was super weird. She got promoted a few weeks ago to being part of the coaching, or not part of the coaching staff, but putting on the coaching stuff.
Yeah, she was.
There was an article in the Province about it. And then it seems suddenly that she's just left the team. Like, she was at the rink a few days ago and then nothing. And then no report from the team, no official statement.
It's handled very poorly.
It's really weird because that hiring was pretty made pretty public by, you know, by the organization itself, right? Like, she, which is, you know, it's not... teams don't always release, like, big announcements about members of analysts or people behind the scenes necessarily. But, you know, she's a pretty qualified individual who's pretty active on Twitter. And you know, they decided to make a big, not a big, I don't want to say a big fuss, but they made it, like, it made news. She was on, people knew about it. People knew that she'd been hired. And just to have her let go and not really make any kind of comment about it, it just came across as weird. And no kind of communication from the front office, from Rutherford, from anybody to confirm it. It was kind of just up in the air. And, you know, this is a pretty hockey mad market, so people are going to talk about it once the rumor was out there. And then now it comes out, and it's on a Friday afternoon that that news was confirmed. And
still
again,
no official release from the club
or anything like that. So
I was going to say, this is giving me, like, just with how poorly this is handled, this is like Benning level of, you know, how we're handling situations here. I mean,
it just, to me, it's like where there's smoke, there's fire. There's got to be something around here that we don't know. I'm not going to comment on it really too in depth. You guys have kind of covered all the major points. But I do think that it's kind of a pattern of behavior from this organization now, which seems to be concerning. That's kind of what
I was
going to
say. I mean, like, the end of the day, they don't make a comment about it. But, you know, Bruce Boudreau is doing a media availability, and, you know, someone's
asking.
He says
he can't comment.
Yeah,
about
he says I can't comment. He
so who can comment on it?
Said that's Alvin's decision. So
unless there's
Alvin's
kind of
legal, you can't talk about what's happening on the coaching staff.
I'm going to just say, there is obviously just a possibility that she has a personal issue, not issue, a personal matter to deal with, and that may be a reason that she's leaving, the personal circumstances that have led her to leave.
Her mom also did tweet out that the truth will come out.
Ominous, I know, but I'm not going to get into that. But I, you know, if she had a personal matter to deal with that made her step away, there's maybe a good reason why, you know, the club isn't publicly commenting, or at least Boudreau wouldn't comment on publicly, because it may be not something that, you know, he's supposed to reveal.
Yeah.
Or maybe he doesn't know. I don't know. So that's just, that's all I want to say about that.
Yeah.
If it's a personal matter, I just don't see what the problem is of saying that she had a personal matter and that's it. Like, that's the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, respect her privacy, etc. If it's that, then you have an easy out there, but it doesn't seem to be the case. Just my thoughts. We'll see. You guys want to talk about JT Miller versus Ryan Kessler? We're kind of running along in. You guys want to do that NHL stuff? I feel like we can still save it for next week. That's evergreen content, they said.
Yeah, we can now. Let's we can get the NHL stuff.
Yeah, sure. Hey, who's made the new intro for this week, right?
Yep.
All right, let's hear it.
I can taste the greatness, this is our time.
But kicked in by Matthews, here it is! There's a new member of the Cersei Gold Club! Goodness, what a goal from Jackson McKinnis!
And back the way comes McDavid, McDavid comes in!
Nice work, Hussein. Yeah, made that 5 minutes before the show started.
Pretty heat, baby.
Pretty good. I like it. So like we said, we'd kind of cut the show in half, maybe, you know, three in thirds, maybe, that we'd have a third of talk about stuff from around the league as well. I know last week we kind of went on on a huge culture debate, so we're trying to keep it on a little more on track this time.
Surprised we were allowed to record today.
But, let's talk about Jake Virtanen. Jake Virtanen signed PTO with David Doyle.
Sounds like
it's not going great, guys. What'd you think of that?
What a surprise.
I just can't believe I'm hearing that again. Let's talk about Jake Virtanen. Like, that's an ick for me. You know, my body doesn't like that.
I'm not going to get into the off-ice stuff, but clearly on ice,
I'm just glad
he's never been a good player. He's never been a good player. I'm not surprised at all to hear that he's not making any kind of impact in the preseason. So that's pretty on par for Jake. So, enjoy the fucking, whatever, 2 weeks left of your NHL career job.
I was kind of enjoying just looking at all this Twitter and be like, where's this guy's effort? You know, he's on a PTO. I'd be like, let me tell you something about Jake Virtanen. He doesn't have effort.
Two words that would not go together.
Yeah, pretty much just, I'm Michael Enoy.
Fuck Jake Virtanen.
Fuck that guy, honestly.
I'm glad. Hopefully
on
he doesn't
ice,
get
off
that.
Ice, whatever, just
total dickhead.
I'm done with him anyway.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm glad there was some very clear direction on that one. Nathan MacKinnon is now the highest paid player in NHL. Does he deserve it?
I'm going to say no. Yeah, okay.
No,
yeah.
Does not deserve it.
No.
No, he's not the best player in the league.
I think so, too. I don't
percentage of the cap-wise, though, he signed for less than McDavid signed for when he signed his contract.
Good for him.
So
the best player in the league?
But, like, the cap changes every year, though, so are you really going to compare?
I don't know. I'm fundamentally against evaluating people's contracts like that. It doesn't really make any sense.
It doesn't? How do you evaluate contracts, then?
Does he provide me good value on that contract? Yeah, he probably provided me fair value, but I don't think... Like, he's the highest paid player in the league. You have to be the best player in the league, in my opinion, to make that contract worth it?
That's kind of...
Which, in my opinion, he's not. So,
well, I mean, I don't even care if he was top three, top four. He's not even the best player in his own team.
That's what Campbell I was better than him. Say. I kind of agree.
I'd be like, hey, man, Campbell Carr's worse than you? He's at $9.5 million. He was an RFA.
I kind of agree.
What are you going to say to your star player, though? You should just help me win the Stanley Cup that, yeah, we're not going to play.
He was arguably the fourth. He was like only their third or fourth best player in the playoffs.
in that playoff run, Mikko Rantanen and you know Gabriel Landeskog played better than both. Yeah. But I mean,
That's what I think. Facts only on this show.
I would just say if I was. Let's put it this way. If I was an Avalanche fan and they signed...
My contract sucks.
Yeah.
I'm saying that about McKinnon real soon.
If
the cap goes up by $10 million, it should be fine.
If I was an Avalanche fan and they signed this contract, you know, okay, that's not true. Because if Canucks ever won a Stanley Cup, I probably wouldn't even care what was happening for, like, at least 5 years. But, like, let's just say I did. I wouldn't be the happiest with this contract.
I would be happy with it. Still, the team is still a contender right now. Best player locked up for long term.
It's not a
steal.
He's
still going to be good for the next 4 or 5 years.
It's not
least,
a value
so.
Contract. It's nowhere near that.
It's not a value contract. Yeah, I agree. I don't think anyone is painting it as a value contract.
There's Avs fans on Twitter who are.
Avs fans are deluded.
He needs to score.
All fan bases are deluded except me. I'm the only sane member of Canucks Twitter.
He needs to score 95. Plus points every single year, and that's worth it. That's just probably
right,
even value.
We'll check back in year 6.
Yeah, that's probably just even value.
Obviously, that's a year contract as well. Should mention that. Nice. Okay. Trevor Zegras took a big hit in preseason game. Got dragged pretty badly.
Adam Henrique had to get
in a fight there. Zegras out long-term for Anaheim.
Could he be.
I'm asking you, how would that affect the season? Obviously not great. I mean, that's like Anaheim's not really competing, but obviously you don't want one of your best, like, they're not trying to compete, though. But obviously you don't want one of your best young players to be out for an extended stretch.
Kind of shitty.
He's a very talented player. He's fun to watch. It would be kind of shitty for him.
I actually like watching
him. From a league-wide perspective, to have him on the shelf after his first preseason game because he takes a hit from some guy who's not going to play any games in the NHL this year. But, I mean, that is the risk you take playing your star players in preseason, obviously. It is almost difficult this time of year because you're probably going to have some veteran guys. Not that Zegras is a veteran, but, you know, he's a lock to make be on the NHL roster versus some guy, fourth line guys, who, you know, energy players coming up from the AHL who are going to try to make a name or make themselves noticed in those preseason games because that might be their only chance to show it. So they're going to want to, play physical with their other team's best players. So obviously a risky take. It wasn't a dirty hit by any means. So, you know, if he is injured, you know, it is part of the game.
Yeah, it was
in some aspect, but obviously hope he's not injured long term.
Yeah.
That is the risk you take when you play these guys in
preseason. I was just about to say, that's the problem with that's why, you know, people are so reluctant to, you know, ice their NHL lineups in preseason. That's why you want to do it in like the last one or two maybe because, you know, everyone else you're playing.
And I understand you want to get them ramped up, but you got to be careful. These guys are, you know, what do you guys think? Is there 20 preseason games at 8 this year?
Oh, I had a funny idea about the preseason that I was telling Ace at work the other day when we got really bored.
Go for it.
Like, should I tell it on the show? I feel like we get inflamed. I said they should make the preseason standings, like, it's still its own season, but the standings should, like, actually count. There should be a point system, and then pretty much what should happen is, like, the whole league should play in a mini preseason tournament to get an extra $2 million on the cap every season.
That is a great idea. That is a great idea.
You would get the extra $2 million, and you could use it for the whole year, but then I'd be like, you could also make trades for, like, rental players in the preseason. So, like, if a team like Anaheim has a guy like Trevor Zegras, the Leafs, there's no salary cap on during the offseason, like, during the preseason tournament. So, if you're the Leafs, you could just trade, here's our first-round pick, give us Zegras for the preseason, then we'll just win the $2 million for all of this season.
Oh, but no way, you'd have to give more than that, buddy. You're going to
risk Zegras actually going...
I don't think that part ever happened.
That part never happened.
That's what I'm saying, you're telling me,
if you were the Leafs and you offered me the first-round pick for Zegras, you guys obviously need the $2 million more than me. So I'd be like,
yeah, leverage.
So I'd be
more.
Like, no, but I'd be like, you're taking my guy. You're gonna actually try to win games competitively. I don't want Zegras taking a fucking career-ending injury, season-ending injury.
Yeah,
playing for a fucking Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
Right.
That was more of the part I was gonna get flamed for. But
the first part I like.
I think they should actually make the preseason kind of count. It would also stop, like, they always have this big issue, like, league-wide, that, you know, they have. What's the rule? You need 6 or 7 players that are classified as veterans for season ticket holders. You're telling me if there was a preseason tournament to get extra cap space, especially in, like, Canadian markets, that you wouldn't sell out preseason games? Like, come on. Like, they would. There would be no problem.
They would definitely generate more interest.
Are you saying players are going to fucking play their hardest to win $2 million of cap space?
I don't know. Make your team better if you're a team that's a cup contender, you might.
And then for those players, it'd be like, yeah.
You're going to balance this. You're not going to go all out.
No, but that's the thing. It would promote the preseason would be okay. That's the only bad thing that, like, it's kind of getting away from, like, those training camp battles, right? Because, like, now you're more inclined to play your best season. But then I'd be like, this is actually ramping up for the season. Like, you're playing against other teams. Like, what
I guess it'd also
see.
Be a little bit easier to swallow it injuries because you'd be like, at least we were playing for something.
Yeah, exactly. We're playing for 2 minutes. We're playing for 2 minutes.
The new frontier in the NHL should allow you to trade cap space amongst teams.
I like that too. That's a great
I mean,
take.
You functionally do it already by trading LTI contracts.
No, but you just look great. Like a team that is not going to go to the higher limit of the cap, they'd be like, I'll trade you $20 million of
they
cap
don't
space.
Want to, okay, number one, they functionally already do that trading LTI contracts. And number two,
but not
they don't want that to happen because teams like Arizona and
Arizona would have traded all
give me another
cap.
Irrelevant franchise. Ottawa back in the day, teams that could barely
lose Winnipeg when they first got here.
They just barely reached the floor to trade the rest of their cap space away.
Yeah, and right? Arizona would
like,
use $10
it's just
million
a free
for
excuse for owners to be like, we don't need to spend the cap. And you're going to have teams like the Rangers and the Leafs and the Canucks and the Habs who are going to be spending $200 million a year because they're just buying cap space.
I think it would just be fun. Like, I just want
it'd
to see
be a
what
fun
it'd be
idea.
Like.
I'm sure there have to be some sort of rules and limits around it, but I don't see why you shouldn't be able to trade like a few million dollars here and there. Anyway, all right. I know we kind of talked about the culture thing last week, but we want to talk about Don Tortorella, Flyers head coach.
Oh.
Comes into practice, bag skates his players to death. Looks in like he's got
looks
Flyers
like
players looking
there.
Like Olli Juolevi out there. Ace, I know you have some thoughts about the bag skating. Do you? What do you think of bag skating in the NHL? I mean, I don't really find the point of it. I mean, like, I get the fitness testing element of it, but I feel like coming in on the first day of a new coach and just like no pucks and just bag skating the boys is just it's so junior hockey. It's just so junior hockey. Like, this is the NHL. These guys are professionals. Like, they do come to camp in shape. Like, I think you're gonna lose.
I feel
more,
like you don't need to doubt that. Yeah,
more downside. I get like Tortorella's like, we gotta forge identity. It'd be tough to play against. I was like, I don't really understand like the functional element of the bag skate. Other than test fitness,
if you want to do like that forge identity and like hard to play against, like I feel like you would just throw in like more battle drills, right? Like, I mean, like this is from when we used to play.
Like
hockey,
you're just
like,
tiring your team out, really. In my opinion, I don't really.
Well,
it's just too. Well, you made a good point about this, Ace. You were saying the professionals, and you said that this is a very junior hockey thing because in the NHL, when you lose, what's the reason? Generally, you'd think. Well, yeah, that was my thing, right? Because I think in the NHL, it's pretty. Sorry, I had a throw bubble there. I think you. It's pretty unlikely you lost because your team wasn't trying hard enough.
Or the
you are. There's a reason all you have made it to the NHL. You are professionals. You're the best at your job, at best at hockey. You come in and try every game, right? You don't just, like, no one half-asses it in the NHL. That's what you hear about all these young guys who come up to the league. You say, hey, no one's taking a shift off. Everyone's always grinding it out every shift. That's why those guys stick in the league, right? And if you're not, you're going to be out of the league in a few
years. Look at you know, Goldobin or Vertanen or whatever. You know, you're not in the league that much longer.
Exactly. I mean, look at a guy like Tanner Pearson. The reason the guy sticks in the NHL is just he never takes a shift off, right? I mean, he didn't play super well in that preseason game, but I digress. My point is that, you know, there aren't guys who are going to be giving you an inch ever, so you're probably not losing because they didn't try hard enough. You're probably losing, number one, because your team wasn't talented enough or good enough, or number two, there was some kind of coaching deficiency or some kind of system deficiency that the other team was exploiting.
Which is more your fault.
Which is more the coach's fault than the player's fault. So it's, you know, the old school days of like, oh, we lost 9-0, let's back skate the ball, let's back skate everybody after practice. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Okay. No, I kind of see it. If you lost 9-0, you made a bank skate happen.
Yeah,
I can kind of see
like
that.
Extreme example, but like, you know, hockey players love the cliche. Oh, we didn't give a full 60 minutes. Like, it's not like they stopped crying. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay, yeah, I agree with that. I don't know. The bank skate in the preseason just seems like, yeah, I like your statement there. It's too junior hockey.
It's not even junior. Do you think in the WHL or something, the players lost because they didn't cry hard enough? I feel like that is more likely because you're dealing with teenagers, you know? Consistency can be an issue
like
for
also,
kids.
In the NHL, you get paid, an insane amount of money. Like, this is your living. Like, you have to come to... Like, if you don't show up to work with no shirt on or, like, just rolling out of bed, like, not, like, prepared to give a presentation to a client or something...
Sometimes I do.
Yeah, okay, sure. Okay, maybe
no, you're right.
Like,
no,
but, like, you wouldn't come to work like that if you had to present to another client. You're just, like, completely ill-prepared. Right, like
this is your livelihood.
Like,
you gotta put food
exactly.
on a family, food on the table
you're
of your family.
For your family. Yeah, exactly. Like, you're not gonna come. You'll be like, oh, like I don't care. I play pro sports. I'm just gonna like show up out of shape. Like, does it matter? Like, no. Like, they'll cut your ass as soon as you get there. Like,
this is your job.
You take it seriously. I feel like in the WHL, you know,
it's not your job.
It's not like that. It's not your job. It's just like
Do you want to get to the next level? But like some
which,
people don't.
Which should be enough. What you would think theoretically that should be enough for
no,
you
but
to
some people just don't have that desire. That's
no, yeah,
not
exactly.
fine.
That's
no, like
saying.
Not
so
everybody's
like,
destined to play.
I think
sports.
Especially at that level, you can definitely get to junior high level junior hockey by just coasting on talent.
So I can, see
which I don't think is true in NHL. Like very,
you
very,
you
very,
know, like, only like no,
very,
maybe, like,
barely.
There's probably like a handful of players who I've ever seen in my entire life
who
I would say like coasted by in the NHL by not giving 100% effort
because
just
were too talented.
Like who?
Alexei Kovalev.
Alexei Kovalev. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
for sure.
I don't. Is Phil Kessel one of those guys?
I don't know.
Kovalov is the first guy I thought of.
Connor McDavid could if he wanted to.
he probably could, but he's
there's
not.
A reason he's the best player in the world.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't like the bag skating junior hockey makes more sense than it does in the NHL. Like in the NHL, I think you know that it's your living and that you're supposed to come like this. It probably
and they know that. I think that's
they
what
do
I was
know
saying.
That,
I think that's
yeah.
what his point is. Yeah. So I don't think it's the bag.
And like if you're a young guy, like obviously, like, why are you worried about the young players too? Like for most of those guys coming to their first training camp, they're like, you know, like, I want to go get out there and get on the right foot, like with my new coach. And my new teammates, like, you won't even be inclined to not try? Well, I don't think you should ever be inclined to not try, but that's a whole separate thing. So, I mean, I don't know. I think it's stupid. It gave me shades of Travis Green, so it was kind of funny to see all the pictures of people lying down. But I think Ace is right also. Like, it burns you out. It seems like a waste of time. There's no positives from it, to be honest.
Yep. All right, Hasty, we're wrapping up the show here.
Yep. I want to talk about Senators quickly. All the Senators. New look team. Should I save for next week?
No, it's fine. I'm down.
Let's save for next week. We've really got another week before the season starts. Yeah, sure. I know you had some strong thoughts on that. Okay, before we read, don't hit anything. AC. We're going to best bets.
Oh yeah.
You always trying to get me out of before best bets, buddy. Excuse me. Hold on. Let me just get to Hold on. I'm finding it. Where is my little best bets segment? Hold on, Ace. Just rag the puck here for a few seconds. Ace, rag the puck for me.
Well, we could just talk about the Ottawa Senators.
I don't really want to talk about the Ottawa Senators. They're right there. They're in there.
Where?
I just want
to
say...
They're right underneath. I know. I'm looking for the little thing I read before.
Oh,
AC,
okay.
There's
a quick little message for Sen's Twitter. Stop telling me Shane Pinto is better than Jacob Chychrun. Okay? Let's just dial that back.
Are the Senators a 100-point team?
No,
hell no.
Not even close.
What's holding them back, though? All right, Hayes, we're about to...
Everything.
I got it. I'm ready to go. Best bets from the CSWC team. Hit me the dollar sign again. Best bets from the CSWC team brought to you by Bet99, the official sportsbook of the Area 51 Sports Network. Use the link on the Area 51 Sports website for up to a $600 bet match on your first deposit. That is the highest in Canada, people. So get out there and start making your money. Who's taking pictures? And as always, please gamble responsibly. Best bets, who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Next week, week 5, Carolina Panthers at the San Francisco 49ers. Give me the Panthers plus 145 on the money line. I'm not liking the Niners this year.
All right. I'll stick with football as well. I'm taking the Cleveland Brown over the LA Chargers. The Cleveland Brown. Not yeah, the Brown. Only over the Chargers plus 110 on the money line. I think Justin Herbert still injured. I don't really think he's going to be fully recovered for week 5. And at the same time, this would really help out my fantasy team because I have Nick Chubb, so I'm kind of hoping for one.
I think the Bengals are back, baby. Give me the Bengals week 5 on the money line over the Baltimore Ravens. I don't know if Lamar Jackson have a great year, but I think the Bengals are back and they're not to be fucked with.
You got the Sizzler.
They're coming off a Thursday night win.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you can get that plus. You guys didn't give the odds. What'd you get? You
said
plus
145.
110.
110.
He
said
110. We both said it.
We both said okay. You can get the Bengals plus 165. Parlay all three of those together, people. Free money.
That's free money.
Free money. All right. Good shit. Great show again, boys. I know we didn't get to every single thing we want to talk about in the show notes, but we will get to it next week. It was an awesome time with you guys. Hold on. Don't worry. It'll
soundboard's about to die.
It'll be under an hour. Don't worry.
The soundboard's about to die.
It won't die right this thing. Thanks for listening on the week, everyone. Find us on all your major podcasting platforms. Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcasts. Just look up Capspace Wins Cups. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Capspace Cups. We're super, super interactive, so check us out. If you don't listen to Apple iTunes, please go to Apple iTunes and leave us a 5-star review because
I'm a 5-star man.
It really helps with the show. Also, go check out all the other great content on the Area 51 Sports Network. Point Shot Hockey, Canucks Mafia, the Third Line Podcast, Terminal City FC, UFO Show, Vans Life, and Fantastic Writing. It is your home for Vancouver sports content. Please note, all the episodes will be out on Sundays now, not Mondays. That's all I got for this week's episode. Talk to you all next week.
Vancouver selects from the University of Michigan, Quinn Hughes.
From Timrå, Elias Peterson.
From Waterloo of the USHL, Brock Besser.
From the London Knights of the Canadian Hockey League, Bo Horvat.
To the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for JT Miller.
And Thatcher Demko with an amazing 43-save performance says, let's play Game 6.
Ladies and gentlemen, please make some noise and welcome the 14th captain of your Vancouver Canucks, Bo Horvat.
Elias comes it in.